Let's do this. 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. And let's pray and get after this. Father, we just commit our time to you. We commit ourselves to you, our hearts, our minds, and ask for your blessing upon our time together. In Jesus' name, amen. So obviously this great classic chapter of the Bible, and I mentioned this, and some of this is just real quick kind of redundant from what we discussed at the end of last week leading into this chapter, but one of the great well-known stories in history too, you know, obviously still referenced in our day and age, underdogs versus some, you know, great opponent. This is almost like Florida State versus the college football playoff selection committee. That's a different conversation, I suppose. But if you don't know, you don't want to know. It's just brutal. But so mentioned this last week, wanted to look at the story again for what it says, right? Not through what we assume, not through what we imagine, not through even, this is important, I think, not just what we remember. Yeah, I read that when I was a kid and I've known that, and of course. But what does it actually say? And I'm going to suggest that a pattern emerges pretty quickly here in 1 Samuel chapter 17. And the pattern is perhaps the singular theme of the chapter. Here's the dilemma, though, by me saying that. If I tell you what I think the pattern is, what I think the theme is, it's probably going to then impact how you view the chapter, right? Like someone's going to say, well, it's this. And so you approach everything with that particular lens. But if, and since our goal in Bible study and Bible reading is to allow the text to speak to us and to speak for itself, me giving you something at the get-go would potentially work against allowing God's Word to speak for itself. So let's do this. Let's just another couple comments here, and then we'll dive into it. I want to kind of relatively quickly work through this relatively long chapter, notice some details, and then return to some of these basic principles and lessons and what I think is the theme that we'll see with this. So this is what I told you last week. We're likely both very familiar with this chunk and quite limited in our knowledge. Do you remember this from last week? Limited in our knowledge of this. And I'm saying knowledge, not even understanding or wisdom. Much like Daniel chapter 6, Genesis chapter 6 through 9, or Joshua chapter 6, for most people, there's like this assumptive knowledge. I mean, it's David and Goliath. I know all about that story. And there's a sense of, there's not much to it, but I'm just kind of scanning the chapter here. There's 58 verses. So David, he got out his little sling there and he slew the giant. Next chapter. 58 verses has something to say. So this assumptive knowledge, again, I think is really dangerous with kind of any approach to the Bible. So, chapter 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Socol, which belongs to Judah. And they encamped between Socol and Azekah in Ephes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, or Elah, and they drew up in battle array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. The Valley of Elah, I actually have on my bookshelf a rock from the Valley of Elah, which is probably not the one that, spoiler alert, was sunk into Goliath's skull here. We'll see that in a few moments. But just this little rock from there, it's this really big... Don, you've probably been there. You've seen that. I mean, it's this really big valley. And as it says, there's mountains there. What you need to remove from your thinking is it's not like the Rocky Mountains or the Alps or something like that. More like great hills than true what we would imagine as giant mountains. But so here's the people of Israel. They've got their king. Some good things are happening in the sense of there's some victories that are happening. And don't you find this to be true? I mean, I'm already getting off track a little bit, but don't you find this in your personal life to be true? Man, there's some victories. Oh, wait, there's more enemies. Like, don't you just want things to just settle into place for a little bit? And can't we just have, not typically, there's going to be battles that keep going. So besides the Philistine army, verse 4, and a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath, or Goliath, is from Gath, or Goth, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, a cubit, roughly 18 inches, call that about, or 18 inches is a foot and a half, but it's, so it's about a foot and a half. So 6 cubits, you can check your math here real quick. Half of 6 is 3, so add those two together. That's about 9 foot tall, and it says, and a span. A span would be kind of from finger to thumb there, and if it was normally that's about 8 inches, but if this is a span of Goliath's hand, I don't know. Is that another 12 plus inches? So likely just a normal 8-inch span. In fact, there's a in our day and age today, there's a couple professional basketball players that have a hand span of 12 inches, like crazy. And like you see them holding a a water bottle, it's like this little tiny thing to them. So anyhow. Goliath, roughly 9.5, perhaps even 10 foot tall. Well, that's just made up because no one's ever been that tall. Well, of course, that's silly, and you can look through even other parts of history and then other historians that have made such claims, but you don't even have to go very far. You can go to 1940, and there was a young man named Robert Pershing Wadlow. He died in 1940, aged 22 years old. He died at 8 foot 11 inches tall. So it's not, and that's, it's a really sad story with the kid. He just kept growing and he couldn't stop it. So this is all just made up. No, it's not. Keep going. Verse 5. He had a bronze helmet on his head and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. He had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Just real quick, his armor, people would estimate it roughly 125, maybe more, pounds. Like, just wear that, and the point of the spear, probably another like 15 pounds. Big, strong guy, tons of armor. I would imagine that would be pretty impressive. So his shield bearer went before him, and then verse 8, he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me." I like the practicality of this, right? There's no need for excessive bloodshed. "If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." I think it's probably safe to say, as you're looking at this and approach this from several different standpoints, and this is what we'll see as we kind of discover the theme along the way here. If you're a member of the Israeli army at this time, at this portion of history, how are you viewing this man? In other words, like, humanly speaking, who's really going to defeat this guy? And if I'm part of the Philistine army, who's really going to defeat our champion? Like, who's really going to get this guy? I would suggest that the Philistine army must have been fairly content. Like, that's, or confident, right? Like, content in the sense of, this is our champion, that's the right guy, we're content with that, but confident that no one's really going to beat him. So he gives this challenge. And the Philistine said, verse 10, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man so that we may fight together." Verse 11, and if you're a highlighting, underlining kind of person, please mark verse 11. "When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." Again, humanly speaking, this is not terribly surprising. This would be sheer terror at this point. And again, just humanly speaking, the man's a literal giant, and is challenging you to a duel to the death. And this is where we'll start to see some contrast, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. But notice the result there of what's before them in verse 11 once again. And notice who is represented in this: Saul, the king, and all Israel. When they heard these words of the Philistine, please take note of that. They heard the words. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. What's fascinating to me as you study the life of Saul, how often you read about fear. And didn't we just see some of that last week? I feared the people. I feared you. I feared, and there's this kind of this sense of almost like his economy was that of fear. People were afraid of him. And even when, in chapter 16, when David's anointed king, when Samuel arrives there, and Samuel's afraid, like, Lord, that's fine. I'll go to Jesse. I'll go to Bethlehem. But I'm afraid if Saul hears this, what's going to happen to me? And Samuel arrives there, and the people, hey, Samuel, have you come in peace? Like, there's just this general fear. And he controlled by it, and he was controlled by it. Notice also there in verse 11, it says, dismayed. Dismayed. Another translation, if you have a different translation, it would say they lost their courage. Another translation renders this simply there in verse 11, upset. And literally this concept of being dismayed can be translated to be broken or shattered. Like just mentally, psychologically even, broken or shattered. And of course, where you start to see the history of this is where you notice this and you find the same word in other Old Testament passages that use it. Here's a few of them, if you're a note taker. This is Deuteronomy 31 and verse 8. Deuteronomy 31, verse 8. And the Lord, He is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed. Don't be upset. Don't be broken. He's with you. And three more. These ones are from Joshua. Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed. Same word. Why? For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. That's a whole other sermon, isn't it? The four in that. Because. Well, why shouldn't I be afraid? I mean, look at everything that's... I mean, look at our world today. I need to stay on track here. But there's plenty of reasons to fear. There's plenty of reasons to have anxiety. There's plenty of reasons to be dismayed, to lose courage. Wait. That's right. The Lord's with me. I don't need to be dismayed because the Lord's with me. Wherever I go, He's with me. Joshua 8:1. The Lord said to Joshua, do not be afraid nor be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you and arise, go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai and his people, his city and his land. Like, I've already taken care of it, so I need you to go. And then Joshua chapter 10 and verse 25, then Joshua said to them, he's communicating to the people, do not be afraid nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus the Lord will do to all your enemies against whom you fight. I love this. And it's constant throughout the Bible. It's its own kind of sub-theme. This pattern, not simply don't be afraid, don't be dismayed, but here's why, here's how, because the Lord. The Lord. But for Saul, fear is his currency. So, everyone hears the words of the Philistine. They're dismayed, and it's interesting that it says it the way it says it. I'm reading from the New King James, verse 11. It doesn't just say afraid. Everyone have different renderings of this or something along the same lines? Greatly afraid. Like, I'm afraid. I'm greatly afraid. Oh, and dismayed, oh, by the way, on top of it, verse 12. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had eight sons. The man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. And the three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to battle. The names of his three sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep in Bethlehem. Returned from where? Do you remember in chapter 16? He played the harp for the king. Which is a whole interesting thing, as we'll see in just a few minutes, that there was this, should have been some familiarity. So, David there, appointed to be king, And don't miss this little tidbit in the text. Appointed to be king, the previous chapter, but still faithful in service until then. What was needed? You need, Dad, you need me to take care of the sheep? I will take care of the sheep. Not, I'm the next king. I don't do sheep, you know. I don't do windows. I don't do vacuuming. He does whatever. What a great man. And he's a young man at this point. He's possibly just in his teen years, oh, by the way. So verse 16, the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Here's Goliath, the same challenge, the same threat, the same what? Offer, basically. Like, we can just end this right now. Send a warrior and we can get this going and just end it. So Jesse said to his son, verse 17, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp. And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000 and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. I'd like to hear how my sons are doing. Now Saul, verse 19, and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. There's a quick note here with that, by the way. It says fighting, and apparently this is not full-on battle. Perhaps, as we'll notice here in even verse 20, there's some shouting happening. So perhaps this is more verbal than anything. Perhaps more verbal, you know, just shouting at each other until someone made a move. But it's entirely possible that it says fighting and there's perhaps minor skirmishes and perhaps Goliath would come out morning and evening like, we can just end this, we can do... But it catches me kind of off guard. Like, it seems like the two armies are at a standstill, but there's some kind of battle happening. So there's fighting. David arose early in the morning, verse 20. He left the sheep with a keeper, and he took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. He's obedient. He came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. A couple things about David here. And two, I think, important side notes. The first thing, if you're going to put this in super practical terms, Dad's asking him to go check on your brothers and bring these loaves and these grains and these 10 varieties of cheese. I mean, those are great ingredients if you're making a pizza pie, you know, at that point. But can I just say that he's a delivery boy? Is that safe to say? Like, bring this along. Do I need my sword or anything? That doesn't say that, but that's all you're doing here. He's just a delivery boy. He's the youngest of his brothers, and just go check on them and bring these things to them. There's another side note that's worth mentioning here. Don't miss this in verse 20. He left the sheep, that doesn't sound good, little prepositional phrase, with a keeper. The heart of a shepherd is this man, concerned for them even in his absence. No doubt would not leave them unless there was someone to take care of that responsibility and to take that responsibility from him and take it seriously, and someone who had the ability and the faithfulness to shepherd those sheep appropriately. Not like, yeah, they'll be fine, they'll work it out. Like, no, he wanted to make sure that the sheep were well tended. It's interesting. So verse 22, David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. And then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. And so David heard them. Same thing he'd been saying those 40 days prior to that. David hears them. Verse 24, again, if you're a highlighting kind of person, maybe mark verse 24. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. What's different in verse 24 than in verse 11? What senses are being employed? Saw him in verse 24. Verse 11, they heard these words. So they're taking it in verbally, then they're just catching all of this, this nearly 10-foot tall man making threats against you. And so in verse 11, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. By the time you get to verse 24 and they're really just looking at this man, they're not greatly afraid, they're dreadfully afraid. Some other little side notes here about David. I like verse 22. This doesn't seem like much of anything, but David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper. He doesn't just drop the stuff, right? He brings it to where it's supposed to be, gets the supplies to the right person. He's faithful even with just, it's just the stuff. I mean, come on, is it that big of a... But this is what his father had sent him to do, and he was faithful with even the things that just seem insignificant. He was faithful with the stuff. Maybe think about Saul. Oh, some years before this, he hid in the stuff. David took care of it. Again, verse 24, they saw the man as opposed to heard the words. They were afraid now of his appearance, as opposed to verse 11, they're afraid of his message. And then there in verse 23, the end of the verse, David heard them. He heard the same words that everyone else heard. And you know the story. Like, there's a sense of, yeah, we got it. He takes on Goliath. But there's more here. He's unmoved by Goliath, or at least he's not moved by fear. Everyone else dismayed, greatly afraid, and then at the end of verse 24, dreadfully afraid. David sees the same giant. He hears the same words as everyone else hears. This reminds me of Paul in Acts chapter 20. You remember this, where he was getting these warnings? Man, don't go, Paul. It's going to be dangerous for you. But he said, I go bound to Jerusalem, not knowing the things that will happen to me there, except chains and tribulation await. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I know there'll be chains. I know there'll be tribulation. But, and this is Acts chapter 20 and verse 24, but none of these things move me, nor do I count my life dear to myself, so that I may finish my race with joy. No. Not joy, Paul. This is a dangerous situation. With joy. And the ministry which I received from the Lord Jesus to testify to the gospel of the grace of God. Paul, it's going to be dangerous. You shouldn't go. Well, I've been asked to go, so I'm going to go. It's going to be bad. I go with joy. I'm thrilled that I can do the work that the Lord has set before me to do. Men like David, Paul, the spiritual lineage of those unmoved by fear, where quite literally you have, look at verse 24 again, everyone else, you see the text? All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, what did they do? Fled. They're moving their feet now, getting away as far as they can from this giant that's challenging them to the death. And here's David. He hears all this. So verse 25, then so the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes. Woohoo! Now, hey. Like, that speaks to everybody, right? Taxes in Israel. This is across all cultures. Then David spoke to the men who stood by, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills the Philistine, this Philistine, and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And notice verse 27, and the people answered him in this manner, saying, so it shall be done for the man who kills him. Like, David's just getting like a little glimpse of like, yeah, this is, you know, Saul's going to provide all these things. Like, David, wait, what's going to happen? And they tell him exactly what they told everybody else. Notice this contrast. Saul here is making this promise, and how is he seeking to motivate the people? By carnal, worldly, and none of this is necessarily sinful. I'm not even suggesting that, but it's temporary and it's temporal stimuli. Man, wouldn't that be great if I get all that stuff? It doesn't last. We understand that. You don't really get to take it with you. What's the old silly word picture that you never see it in a funeral procession a U-Haul, right? Like, you don't take it with you. For David, it's like giant or no giant. This dude is talking bad against the true and living God. Rewards or no rewards? If I can say it kind of in slightly street terminology today, this guy's talking smack about the true and living God. Like, I don't, David doesn't seem, he's curious about, he's asking what the reward's going to be. What shall be done for the man, verse 26, who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? And then this question, for who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Who does this guy, 9 foot, 10 foot tall, whatever, who does he think he is? I would suggest that as Saul is seeking to motivate them by these temporal things, and he can't get any takers, David's motivation, you don't talk about the Lord my God that way. And that was all the motivation he needed. Well, this is the little brother David, don't forget. Verse 28, now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, like kid brother, and he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you've come down to see the battle. Like, that's the only reason you're here, little Davy, right? Like, you're just here to watch this battle happen. And, you know, it's a natural kind of thing. And what do we call that? And I think we call it this more in California than anywhere else. But it's when there's an accident on the side of the road. It's like a rubbernecker or something like that. Like, everyone just kind of pumps the brakes and got to look and see what happened. Like, everyone wants to see the carnage. That's the only reason that you're here. You didn't even take care of the sheep. Well, he did. But big brothers can be that way. Verse 29, David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? And some of your translations might render it slightly different. Is there not a word or is there not a matter to this? And the cause, the thing that mattered to David, I would think is what he said here in verse 26, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? I should also think that his cause, the thing that motivated him, would be, skip down to verse 36. Speaking to Saul, David said, your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Skip all the way down to verse 45. Now he's speaking to Goliath directly. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. You've defied us. You've defied the Lord. And that was David. Is there a cause? I'm here for that. Dad sent me, I've taken care of what I was asked to do, I've been faithful to that, and here's this enemy of the Lord making these kind of claims. So then he turned from them, verse 30, toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. So he's repeating his thoughts on this matter. Notice verse 31. Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Verse 32, then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. I think it's really fascinating that he gets to the king pretty quickly. I mean, I don't know, is this 5-10 minutes? We're just giving it a couple verses here. It's not like, right this way, young man, like, ta-da, here's the king. It's whatever, but I would think that word got around quickly. Why? Verse 11, when they what? Heard the words, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Verse 24, when they saw the giant, they were greatly, no, it's dreadfully, thank you, dreadfully afraid. And here's this little delivery boy, I'll take him. Oh, let's go right now. Like, you need to talk to the king here. And hey, king, sorry to bother you. Because again, what is Saul doing at this point? Like, noticeably absent is the king. You remember this earlier in the book? Where was he when Jonathan went to fight? Sitting under a pomegranate tree. I don't know if there's any pomegranate trees. I don't remember seeing pomegranate trees in the Valley of Elah when I was there, but this is now, we're seeing him other than the mention of him earlier when he, like the rest of the men, were greatly afraid. And David arrives, says, I'll go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, verse 33, I want you to notice the confidence of this statement. You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. Two reasons. Number one, for you are a youth. And number two, he is a man of war from his youth. When he was your age, kid, he was already getting after it. And you're just a kid. So he seems pretty sure of this. Sorry, kid. You can't possibly think that you could win this fight. Slight paraphrase there, but not so much. You are not able. And what's the reason? Because Goliath's offer was, bring it. You send your champion against me. Mano y mano, right? We're going to get after it. And it's a winner take all. So, like, look, kid, if we're going to send anyone, we're not sending you. Like, that's not... And why is he standing before the king? Because no one else thought it could be possible either. This is the first word that anyone's ever like, I could do it. I'm willing. And then David answers Saul, and I love that it opens verse 34 with a contrasting word. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it, and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. What a childhood that David had, first of all. Your servant, verse 36, has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord, please notice verse 37, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord will be with you. Three quick kind of notes from verses 34 to 37. Don't miss the shepherd's heart. At what point, dude, it's a lion that just took one of the little lambies. Like, that thing's gone, right? It's a lion, and I can't possibly take on a lion. Except a shepherd says, that doesn't matter. That's secondary. I've been tasked with taking care of sheep, so just because one's been taken, that's no reason for me to shirk my responsibilities. So there's the shepherd's heart from the man, but you can't miss this for David. Like, the reason behind not his willingness, his motivation, of course, again, was that Goliath has defied the Lord, but his reason in that, I can do it, like, Saul, I'm your man for this. I've been prepared. I took on a lion, victory, check. Bear, check. There's no tigers, so no, oh my, right there, right? But a giant? How much worse could a giant? I can do this, O king. And then the ultimate thing with this, David's confidence was always in the right place. That's why I wanted to highlight verse 37. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Any victories that I've had in the past, it's the Lord. It's not like I got that bear. It's like, yes, I was victorious because the Lord. And David recognized this wonderful and simple truth. God's past faithfulness demands his present trust. It's not if, it's since. Since God has delivered me, past tense, he will deliver me at this moment. I am willing and ready and able to take on any old giant that the enemy of the Lord might throw at us. And fascinating there, Saul's response at the end of verse 37, go and the Lord be with you. Like, this is the only person I've got that's willing to fight Goliath, so go and the Lord be with you. It's almost, Saul knew, it's not me. I can't do it. And the Lord be with you. He still, you remember how the last couple of chapters, like, there's some sense of worship from Saul. There's recognition of who the Lord is. but the Lord's not really working on my behalf, and I've certainly kind of shunned him, so I believe the Lord will do this for you. He's not going to do it for me. It's interesting. Verse 38, so Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head, and he also clothed him with a coat of mail. And David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them, wasn't prepared for that. And David said to Saul, I can't walk with these, for I've not tested them. So David took them off. Again, pretty fascinating, this limited vision by Saul. If you're going to fight, here's how it needs to be done. I also find it fascinating, and I actually hadn't even noticed this till literally just now reading it out loud. Look at it again. What does he give to David? Verse 38. His armor, of course, it's Saul's armor. A bronze helmet on his head. Does that sound like the same verse 5? A bronze helmet on Goliath's head. Also armed with a coat of mail. It would be chain mail. He gives David what Goliath had. If you're going to fight Goliath, you need to fight on his terms kind of thing. Here's how it needs to be. This is a minor problem here, and I'm being a bit sarcastic with the use of the word minor. Saul, this is your armor. Dude, you're the king. He's unwilling to put it to work. He's unwilling to go. And what's the, not character trait, but what's the one physical trait of Saul that we know? Head and shoulders above everybody else. Like if we're going to have the helmet against, that guy's got that helmet and chainmail against, and whatever other weapons and swords. Well, King Saul, you're the tallest, so you should. He's just in his tent at this point. Here you go, kid. Wear these. I mean, I'm not willing to even try, but yeah, go for it. You're willing, so this, the Lord be with you. David just, I can't. It's not working. Takes him off. And he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag and a pouch which he had. I love that. The shepherd's bag and a pouch that he had. He was familiar with those, tested with those. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David. And the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine, this is Goliath, verse 42. When the Philistine, what? Looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he's only a youth, ruddy and good looking. He disdained him. I can only imagine, I don't know what the Philistine vernacular would have been, but it's like, is this some kind of a joke? But I've been out here for 40 plus days, 40 days before David arrived to deliver the pizza ingredients, right? And like, this is, you're sending, he's a kid. Like, you're kidding me at this point. He disdains him. Like, he's bothered by this. He's insulted by this. And so the Philistine, upset, verse 43, said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? Like, this is a joke. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Oh, the plot thickens there a little bit. And the Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Again, confidence? And is it confidence in his gods? It doesn't even seem to be that. He just curses David with his gods. But the sense from Goliath is, this is self-confidence. And again, humanly speaking, why wouldn't he be confident? He's nearly 10 foot tall. He's a warrior. Remember what Saul said in verse 33? He's been a warrior since he was a kid from his youth. And they're sending he's a shepherd. A cute little slingshot. He's insulted by this. In many ways, David did not stand a chance. In many ways, humanly speaking. But, remember verse 37? This was not David's fight. The Lord will deliver this giant. Verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, he's now speaking to Goliath, right? Everyone else heard the words of Goliath and did what? Fled. David, as you saw, is it the end of verse 40? He drew near to, he's approaching him, and now he's speaking to this giant, to this champion, to this warrior. He says to Goliath, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, and oh, by the way, this is how I read it, and don't overread into too much, because it's, I don't want to say it the wrong way, it's not just text, it's actual history, but in the sense of it's just text, it's here's what happened. We're not given tone. We're not given, was David like, you've got a sword and a javelin. Oh man, he's really tall. I get the sense that David's voice is like rising as he speaks here. There's this crescendo with this. You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day, not me, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. Like, whoa, champ, right? And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistine. You said, you're going to take me out? No, all of your army is going down this day, good sir, to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then verse 47, he's not done. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear. Why? For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. I wonder if David's like, that's what I have to say to you. That's what's going to happen. Again, practically speaking, humanly speaking, if I'm David, and if I'm me, and if you're you, and if we're us, any of us versus Goliath, it's Goliath, right? that's what's going to happen. Goliath versus the Lord God of Israel, do you want to guess who wins that fight? I think the big picture here, and I almost want to do some more of this next week, and maybe we will, maybe we'll end a little bit early tonight, but I think the big picture is, go back to verse 11, they hear the words, are dismayed and greatly afraid. Verse 24, they see the man and are dreadfully afraid. What's their like point of reference? Goliath. I mean, look at the guy. I can't. That's humanly speaking, this is impossible. And Goliath, he's like, it's over. I got you guys. There's almost a sense from David. It's not really even almost a sense from David. There's almost like pity. Like, you against the Lord? You don't. I'm a shepherd boy with a sling and a little shepherd pouch. Sir, you don't. You're going to die today and the entire army behind you. Like, if you want to turn around and look at the mountain of your comrades, everyone, you're all going to die today. Everyone saw this. David saw above Goliath. This whole situation of fear, you can either be consumed with it, or you can say, yeah, that should actually concern me. A giant that wants to kill me, like that should be concerning to some degree. But if I say, no, that's like, this is blocking out the sun. No. There's something greater than Goliath. So Goliath, you don't stand a chance. This is not about me, the Lord. And don't miss that. Verse 47, the Lord does not save with sword and spear. It's not about that. The battle's the Lord's. And he'll give you into our hands. So it was verse 48, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David. So now he's approaching. That David, notice the verbs here, hurried and ran towards the army to run away from. No, it doesn't say that. To meet the Philistine. Everyone else fled. He's now not just approaching, he's running towards the giant. And while he's running, verse 49, David put his hand in his bag and he took out a stone and he slung it and he struck the Philistine in his forehead so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. Quick note here, this is, in a word, supernatural. There's no kind of velocity that a kid, you know, you might be an expert slingshotist. I don't know what the word is for that, but like, get your mark every time, but sinks into the cranium. Like, yeah, that's divine. David's not like, look out, you want to challenge me with a slingshot? Like, this, no. Falls down on his face to the earth. So David prevailed against the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there is no sword in the hand of David. He didn't need it. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, 9.5, 10-foot-tall dude, took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him. So whether the stone had killed him or the final kind of blow rendered here, and he cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Yeah, that's correct at that point. Because guess who was watching this whole thing? Both armies, right? Like the Israelis, like, well, we lasted this long. Lasted 40 plus days, you know, and now David's going to get killed and we're going to go inevitably serve the Philistines. And the Philistines are like, finally, just crush that little dog of a kid. There's no chance here. And I wonder if the Israeli army is thinking, did that just happen? And the Philistine army, did that just happen? He chops off the giant's head. And I imagine just holding this thing, right? So they flee. Verse 52, now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted, and they pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Sha'araim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. In verse 53, then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. And still got it. Verse 54, David took the head of the Philistine, and he brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. Like, how big is a giant? The guy's 9.5 foot tall. How big is his head? You know, just brings that to Jerusalem. The armor, how broad is the armor of this? I'm going to keep that. That's a nice little souvenir. I can't miss this, though. Verse 51, the Philistines flee when they what? See. They see this. It's over. And then verse 52, now everyone else is involved. I might suggest to you that true faith, active faith, living faith, we might not like this word in our day and age, but it's contagious. Did that just happen? That kid, what were his three older brothers thinking? Like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, he was just, the last chapter, anointed king, and now he's killing giants? I guess we're going to enter the fray here as well, and we're going to just see what happens. Verse 55, this is fascinating. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as your soul lives, O king, I don't know. So the king said, inquire whose son this young, like, who is this kid? Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, like he's fighting, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. Like he still hadn't yet delivered it to Jerusalem, apparently. Again, I imagine just carrying it around the whole time. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David said, I am the son of your servant, Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Super fascinating. And again, we'll dig into this a little bit more next week because there's actually quite a bit more in this chapter. But the king literally has no idea who this kid is. That strikes me as really interesting for two reasons. Number one, is this the first time that David had met the king? The quick answer is obviously not. Where had he met him? previous chapter? Playing the harp. I thought you said in the army. Playing the harp. So he's already been in the king's court. The king appreciates the music of the king. Like, he's soothed by this, but I don't... I mean, pay attention. Unconcerned. I don't actually care. Just make things better for me. Does he even ask his name? I don't know. But he has no idea who this kid... Like, he's had to have seen him. Doesn't know who he is. And, oh, by the way, just earlier in the day, in this chapter, there's enough of a conversation. Like, seriously, look, kid, you are not able to do this. You're just a kid, number one, and he's been a warrior since he was a kid. You can't do it. Well, it's the Lord's going to do this. Okay, then take my armor. Here you go. Let's give it a shot. Like, what's the worst that can happen? He will kill you. And we will not agree to his terms. Like, that's... Thanks. Like, ask his name? Anything?
Didn't Jonathan attack the Philistines earlier, and he basically pulled his armor bearer for what? Let's just pray that the Lord will be with us. And so I'm sure Saul heard about that, and so maybe that was something in there too.
Could be. Like, there's kind of this history of someone willing to do it, but it hasn't rubbed off on Saul.
No, he keeps getting brushes.
Correct. He does. It's not here, nor is it here. And to the point, I don't even know your name. It doesn't really matter, because you're probably going to get slaughtered in just a few moments anyway. So here, take my armor. I'm not using my armor. But I think, just in terms of, because you can't miss it as a leader. Yeah, he's ignored those things historically that have already happened. He's not been involved in these things, but he doesn't seem terribly interested in the individual. He doesn't care who this kid is, except, wow. So that, I wonder if Saul saw it happen. Or was he just in his tent, like, someone just deliver the news when it's over? Like, does he watch? Does he enter the fray? Does he fight? Like, who's this kid that actually... Because later on, of course, what's going to happen? He's super jealous of David. So he's only concerned with him when it might be good for him. Like, he's so self-consumed and so governed by fear and governing by fear, he doesn't even care about the individual. Hey, Abner, like, find out whose kid that is. That's pretty impressive. Let's figure out who this kid is. Tell you what, next week, let's dig into this a little bit more. I think there's just... Interesting, though, right? Like, David and Goliath, I know that story. Read it again this week. And what else, I'm going to say it specifically, what else do you see, what else do you observe just from the text? And so what I didn't mention to you at the beginning, because I want to just read it, let the text speak for itself as best that I could, is look for contrasts. I already alluded to a couple of them. The major contrast, David hears and sees the same thing that everyone else sees. They're driven by fear and literally flee. David draws near to the giant, though he hears and sees the exact same stuff. There's a whole bunch of contrast built in this chapter. A lot of it, David and Saul, and a lot of it then further, David and Goliath. I would suggest this, though, too, as you, number one, read it. Number two, look for those contrasts. Be so careful to not put yourself as the hero of the story. You ever do this? You're reading the Gospels and Jesus heals someone. Like, yeah, how can I be Jesus for someone else? Yes, fine. We need to be thinking how we can bless other people. But if you're really reading the story, it's more, man, I need Jesus to heal me. Like, I'm the person that's not the hero in the story, right? Maybe imagine this as, why am I not like David? In what ways am I seeing the problems in life, because our whole lives are not like David and Goliath kinds of battles. I get it, and there's some parallels that we can make, but careful to not get carried away with that. But especially when the whole thing revolves around fear, that's probably a good starting point. And the contrasts that are built into this, just see if you can notice some contrast, and we'll dig into that a little bit next week, potluck next week anyways, and... Yeah, maybe we won't even live stream it. Maybe we'll just have some conversation a little bit more. We'll get into it a little bit more. And then the following week, of course, is some Christmas song. So there you go. Chapter 17 at face value. Get into it again next week. God bless you guys. Thanks for being here. Have a good night.